Ursula heard them pass from her bed in the shadows, and she made a cross with her fingers. Santa Sofia de la Piedad existed for an instant, leaning over the embroidered tablecloth that she had just ironed, and she thought of her son, José Arcadio II, who, without changing expression, watched the last soldiers pass by the door of the Hotel Jacob. Martial law enabled the army to assume the functions of arbitrator in the controversy, but no effort at conciliation was made. As soon as they appeared in Macondo, the soldiers put aside their rifles and cut and loaded the bananas and started the trains running. The workers, who had been content to wait until then, went into the woods with no other weapons but their working machetes, and they began to sabotage the sabotage. They burned plantations and commissaries, tore up tracks to impede the passage of the trains that began to open their path with machine gun fire, and they cut telegraph and telephone wires. The irrigation ditches were stained with blood. Mr. Brown, who was alive in the electrified chicken coop, was taken out of Macondo with his family and those of his fellow countrymen and brought to a safe place under the protection of the army. The situation was threatening to lead to a bloody and unequal civil war when the authorities called upon the workers to gather in Macondo. The summons announced that the civil and military leader of the province would arrive on the following Friday, ready to intercede in the conflict. José Arcadio II was in the crowd that had gathered at the station on Friday since early in the morning. He had taken part in a meeting of union leaders and had been commissioned, along with Colonel Gavilan, to mingle in the crowd and orient it according to how things went. He did not feel well, and a salty paste was beginning to collect on his palate when he noticed that the army had set up machine gun emplacements around the small square and that the wired city of the banana company was protected by artillery pieces. Around 12 o'clock, waiting for a train that was not arriving, more than 3,000 people, workers, women, and children, had spilled out of the open space in front of the station and were pressing into the neighboring streets, which the army had closed off with rows of machine guns. At that time it all seemed more like a jubilant fair than a waiting crowd. They had brought over the fritter and drink stands from the Street of the Turks, and the people were in good spirits as they bore the tedium of waiting and the scorching sun. A short time before 3 o'clock, the rumor spread that the official train would not arrive until the following day. The crowd let out a sigh of disappointment. An army lieutenant then climbed up onto the roof of the station where there were four machine gun emplacements aiming at the crowd and called for silence. Next to José Arcadio II, there was a barefooted woman, very fat, with two children between the ages of 4 and 7. She was carrying the smaller one, and she asked José Arcadio II, without knowing him, if he would lift up the other one so that he could hear better. José Arcadio II put the child on his shoulders. Many years later, that child would still tell, to the disbelief of all, that he had seen the lieutenant reading Decree No. 4 of the civil and military leader of the province through an old phonograph horn. It had been signed by General Carlos Cortes Vargas and his secretary, Major Enrique Garcia Isaza, and in 3 articles of 80 words, he declared the strikers to be a bunch of hoodlums, and he authorized the army to shoot to kill. After the decree was read, in the midst of a deafening hoot of protest, a captain took the place of the lieutenant on the roof of the station, and with the horn he signaled that he wanted to speak. The crowd was quiet again. "Ladies and gentlemen," the captain said in a low voice that was slow and a little tired, "you have 5 minutes to withdraw." The redoubled hooting and shouting drowned out the bugle call that announced the start of the count. No one moved. "5 minutes have passed," the captain said in the same tone. "One more minute and we'll open fire." José Arcadio II, sweating ice, lowered the child and gave him to the woman. "Those bastards might just shoot," she murmured. José Arcadio II did not have time to speak, because at that instant he recognized the hoarse voice of Colonel Gavilan echoing the words of the woman with a shout. intoxicated by the tension, by the miraculous depth of the silence, and furthermore convinced that nothing could move that crowd held tight in a fascination with death, José Arcadio II raised himself up over the heads in front of him, and for the first time in his life he raised his voice. "You bastards!" he shouted. "Take the extra minute and stick it up your ass!" After his shout, something happened that did not bring on fright, but a kind of hallucination. The captain gave the order to fire, and 14 machine guns answered at once. But it all seemed like a farce. It was as if the machine guns had been loaded with caps, because their panting rattle could be heard, and their incandescent spitting could be seen, but not the slightest reaction was perceived, not a cry, not even a sigh among the compact crowd that seemed petrified by an instantaneous invulnerability. Suddenly, on one side of the station, a cry of death tore open the enchantment. "Mother!"